April 15th, 1947, wearing number 42 for the Brooklyn Dodgers, Jack Roosevelt Robinson took the field and officially broke the color barrier in the National League, becoming the first African-American player to play professional baseball. That day, one of the most important in the history of American sports, specifically Major League Baseball, will live in infamy and is celebrated on April 15th every single year around Major League Baseball. Good evening and welcome to a special edition of Black History Always on ESPN Wisconsin, presented by Good Karma Brands, the Jackie Robinson Day edition. I'm Tony Cartagena, and over the next hour, you are going to hear exclusive one-on-one interviews, sit-downs, that former Brewers dugout reporter Telly Hughes conducted with some of the players whose career and highlights were made possible due to the path that Jackie Robinson paved nearly 100 years ago. On today's show, you're going to hear conversations with Brewers' current associate manager, Ricky Weeks. You're going to hear from 2011 postseason hero Niger Morgan, Mike Cameron, who signed with the Milwaukee Brewers as a free agent, and from Jeremy Jeffress, who played a pivotal role in the bullpen for the Brewers as they made a run to the NLCS in 2018. You're listening to Black History Always on ESPN Wisconsin, presented by Good Karma Brands. And as April 15th is obviously a celebration of Jackie Robinson breaking the color barrier in the National League, I did want to also pay respect and pay homage to July 5th of that same year, 1947. Larry Doby took the field for the team that was then named the Cleveland Indians and broke the color barrier in the American League. Jackie Robinson's impact on and off the field obviously helped pave the way for Doby's opportunity in Cleveland. However, Jackie was first to do it in the National League, Doby first to do it in the American League. But guys like them, their impact, what they endured physically and mentally during that time period, it paved the way, whether it's Prince Fielder, CeCe Sabathia, the aforementioned Ricky Weeks, Jeremy Jeffress, Niger Morgan, African-American players who have made massive impacts in their own lives, the lives of their families, their lives of generations to come, and the lives of others who just grew up around the sport. Without the impacts of a Jackie Robinson, there is no black media in the dugout. Telly Hughes doesn't get the opportunities that he does years and years later if someone wasn't there to do it first in the way that Jackie Robinson was. There's no Tony Cartagena, myself, working in sports media without the sacrifices that these players dating back to 1947 made. So it's not just all about on the field. It's about the impact their long-lasting effect on the lives of so many people. That is why April 15th, in my opinion, should always, always be celebrated in the game of baseball, something we never want to forget, because what Jackie Robinson dealt with on the field, off the field, in the press, at home, he was never safe. He was never in a position where he could ever feel comfortable. He was always in a position where he had to defend himself and his family, and those sacrifices will never be forgotten. April 15th, 1947, as I said earlier, one of the most important days in American sports history, specifically for Major League Baseball. Now, without further ado, on this special edition of Black History Always on ESPN Wisconsin, presented by Good Karma Brands, I present to you Telly Hughes. First up, his one-on-one sit-down conversation with Ricky Weeks, the now associate manager of the Milwaukee Brewers. Take a listen.
You being someone that has a connection with the old Negro League, and I mean with your grandfather, and knowing the significance of April 15th, 1947, when Jackie Robinson broke the color barrier, when you look at the game today, how can the generation now pass on the legacy and what Jackie Robinson meant to everything that has been accomplished in Major League Baseball by African-American players to this point?
Yeah, the first thing I look at is just, you know, keeping that name and the message and the whole folklore about Jackie Robinson alive. You know, anytime we get to a point where we are, you know, at some point, you know, thinking about, okay, what happened back then or what happened to Jackie Robinson and things like that, you know, you have to talk about it. And I think the biggest thing that, you know, we can do for a Jackie Robinson and his story and history behind him and the Major League Baseball, we have to keep the name alive and keep talking about it.
Yeah, gotcha. Now, mentioning that, I mean, thinking about that 2008, 2009, 2010 seasons, the Milwaukee Brewers had probably the most black players on one team in Major League Baseball. You want to talk about something that we probably won't see again when you had 6, 7, 8 African-American players on one team. When you look back at that, I mean, did you all really take notice to what was going on, or were you guys just so into the season where you just thought of, you know, you just said, okay, we'll think about that later? Because that was pretty significant then, and it's significant now.
Yeah, no, for sure. I think going back there, I think we knew subconsciously, I think, but it was never harped on. It was never thought about because we were so into the season, and you know, we just had a great clubhouse, man. I don't care what it was. It was always about the clubhouse, and we were a very tight knit group. And I think during it, I don't think we really knew. Maybe after the game, we would talk about it, I think, a little bit. But it really, it wasn't like a really big deal. We were just so into the season. But in hindsight, you know, you look back at it and you look at the transition of Major League Baseball right now, with the you know, the lesser percentage of African Americans inside this game. You know, we look back, this was 15 years ago, you know, let's say, you know, that was something that, you know, to this day, I'll probably say is, you know, very special to me and very special to everybody who was a part of that.
Yeah. And I know there are things that you all may do, because I've taken notice, like Jason Bourgeois, who is the Chicago White Sox first base coach. He wears high socks in honor of the Negro Leagues you know, Jackie Robinson and the way that they wear their socks. You know, I've taken notice how you wear high socks. And is that an opportunity, if someone asks you, why do you do that, it's an opportunity to kind of educate them on the history and how that was the style back then, and it's paying honor to those players?
I wouldn't say that, for, you know, for me at least. I know Jason Bourgeois very well. Me and him talked a couple weeks ago, but I know for him, yeah, for sure. I think for me, honestly, I think it just looks good. I don't know. But, you know, for me, but, you know, it's all seriousness. You know, I have heard that before. For me, it's just, you know, go out there and I guess, you know, you look good, you coach good, I guess. I don't know.
All right. And again, this is going to run opening day, so I'm just going to ask you a couple of questions about the team this year, and then I'll get you out of here. So so big picture with this team, Ricky, I mean, every year it seems like the Brewers kind of overachieve, and you know, you got the manager of the year and Pat Murphy and you right by his side coming back. What is the big picture of this team, and what are the true expectations of what this year's ball club can do?
You know, honestly, it's kind of day by day. You know, we look at our roster last year, you know, nobody really gave us a chance. You know, you look at the moves that we made. I think it was over 17 starting pitchers we had come through. Over 60 plus players that touched our roster throughout the year last year. So you know, people can say that we were underdogs, or you know, they counted us out and things like that. But to be perfectly honest with you, I think everybody inside this room expects more. So I'm not gonna say we're gonna do more or do less, but we're gonna keep plugging every day. And you know, that's what's instilled inside of us. That's what we try to promote to our players, and at the end of the day, you know, it's all about the players, and they show the play every day. So that's the beautiful thing about being a Milwaukee Brewer right now.
And another beautiful thing about being a Milwaukee Brewer is having Christian Yelich back. And Ricky, it's not too far. You're not too far removed from you know, your final playing days. And so being around an all-star caliber player like Yelly and knowing that his career is kind of coming, you know, he's kind of on the back nine of his career. Is there anything that you pass along with your experiences, or you just kind of let him do his own thing? And how is he looking?
No, he's been looking great. You know, I think for him, it's the biggest thing is, you know, if you're in this league, you're always learning. I don't care if you're a first-year player, 10-year vet like he is, you're always learning. And I think from his standpoint, there's not too much I can say, anybody can say to him to even grow his game, you know, even more. But I know we have kind of challenged him to kind of speak up more, to give his wisdom, because I think it means a lot, you know, coming from a player. So I think with him speaking up a lot more over the past couple of years and doing his thing, you know, he's only going to help everybody around him. And it's not a coincidence that we're winning baseball games because of our clubhouse.
If you missed any of Telly Hughes' sit-down conversation on Jackie Robinson Day with Ricky Weeks, you can download it in the brand new ESPN Wisconsin app. Just your Apple App Store, Google ESPN Wisconsin app. Download this exclusive content today. But I'm afraid to die. Welcome back into Black History Always on ESPN Wisconsin, presented by Good Karma Brands, the special Jackie Robinson Day edition. If you're just tuning in, on April 15th, 1947, the great Jackie Robinson broke the color barrier in the National League. Larry Doby did it in Cleveland on July 5th of the same year. But on April 15th every year, Major League Baseball celebrates what Jackie Robinson endured and persevered through by celebrating number 42. And that's what we are doing here today on Black History Always. Telly Hughes had the opportunity, you heard earlier in the show, to sit down one-on-one with Ricky Weeks. And now I do want to play some of his one-on-one conversation with 2011 Milwaukee Brewers postseason hero, Niger Morgan. Take a listen.
When you do look back on those times, T, and just the transition from being on the opposing team when you're with the Pirates, and you kind of see him in passing, I mean, because the Brewers and Pirates play 100 times a year.
Once you became
a Brewer, how was that
day,
interaction?
Honestly, I don't think nobody even knows except for maybe real true baseball fans, but when I got called up, when I finally got my first call back in 2007 with the Pirates, that September call-up, basically my first game was in Milwaukee, and my first hit was against Matt Wise. You know, Matt Wise always be in my, you know what I mean? So thank you, Matt. 2-1 count, he threw me a changeup, and I did the exact same thing that basically hit the ball right up the middle, and that was my very first hit, and then that was one of my most memorable hits as well. So you know Milwaukee's always been, you know I didn't know it at the moment, but it's always, you know, been home for me.
And when you think about your relationship, did you ever stop and think to yourself, like, man, I get to be around Bob Uecker every day?
My goodness, yeah. To this day, I'm still, I'm a fan. I kind of have to pinch myself. And, you know, there's sometimes, because I'm humbled too, that I don't realize that, you know, actually, you know, I got that out of, like, you know, millions and millions of young men, little boys out here who strive to get to the major leagues. I was one of them. And I think there's, like, out of everybody, there's like 22,000 and something, like 800 and something. I forgot the exact number, but you know, I'm one of those, you know, those special souls that actually, you know, can say that, you know, I played, and, you know, I cherish this to this day that, you know, I'm a member of a special fraternity, a brotherhood, you know, I'll always, you know, just be thankful and always wear it with pride that I'm a Major League Baseball player, and, you know, that I'm a role model, and, you know, that, you know, I like to go out here and just, you know, go out here and help people. You know, I even try to even, you know, charge people to play this wonderful game that I love doing. And I couldn't even charge people, man. So at the end of the day, that's why, you know, I just turned it into I turned it into my Tony Plush Foundation. And so I just help give back, because I love just teaching and volunteering and being able to give the highest level of knowledge to people who can't be able to play this game. And, you know, this is what I love to do. You know, I'm very passionate about this game, about where it's going. The future is very bright on where it's at right now. So, man, I just, you know, the guys that are out there playing right now, even the young brother, Jackson Cheerio, man, I'm just, you know, the Brewers always there, you know, even Ricky Weeks doing his thing, you know, Pat Murphy doing his thing too. So, you know, it's a wonderful, you know, wonderful squad, you know, and, you know, there's a lot of success there, you know, for some reason, just even when you don't have those household names, the Brew Crew is always in the mix. And, you know, that just shows from, you know, from the leadership, from Mark Antanasio all the way down to the, you know, to the people that are out there scrubbing his shoes, and to you know, people that you don't get to see behind the that are really making it happen. Even Katina doing her thing, Katina Shaw, and all the other special people that are just really, really doing their thing. That makes Milwaukee a well-oiled machine and makes it fun to go to the ballpark and enjoy and make, you know, and it's enjoyable.
Yeah. You mentioned like how grateful you are to be one of the few people to ever play or on a major uniform. And you talk about the future of the game. Mm-hmm. How much do you try to emphasize how the path was paved from Jackie Robinson, like like the young guys understanding what Jackie Robinson did to create these opportunities for other African-American players.
Right. Well, I mean, obviously they picked the right one because he was highly educated and, you know, he knew for a fact that people were going to get under his skin, and he was professional about it, and he didn't break. And basically, he helped pave the way for all of us to get in, not just just African Americans. Is, you know, you got the African Latinos as well. So, you know, it's a blessing, and you know, I'm thankful to even say that I was actually, you know, able to play on certain fields that he actually played on, being in Wrigley, you know, and he didn't play at Dodger Stadium. Where else did he play? Where do you play, in Boston? Are you playing Boston? Yeah. You know, I was actually, you know, and, you know, rest in peace, Wakefield, but, you know, I clipped them too. So, yeah, you know, I'm thankful to just, you know, be able to say that I was, you know, I'm a major leaguer. Yeah. And be around all those special players too.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Absolutely. I mean, because you play with people now that are being inducted to the Hall of Fame. I mean, being around CeCe and things of that nature. So, yeah, man, that is very cool.
Yeah, I went 3-for-5 against him, though, but he rocked me. He threw me a curveball, and he hit the recliner on me, and I...
How in the world you remember all that, man?
Because that's why I'm special. I mean, that's why I didn't have to have, you know, it's like... I guess the video that they needed now, you know, people need, I can remember things like to this day that, you know, it's just, you know, that's why I was special, man, and able to make it up there. And that's why, you know, the analytics and the talented people were able to see, you know, like, nah, man, this dude can play, even though he's a little bit quirky, but you know, he can definitely play out here, man. I wasn't a first rounder, but you know, I can represent for the people in the later rounds, the 33rds and stuff like that. So, you know, hey man, if you can play, they will find you. So no matter where you at, no matter what you're doing in life, even if you're at the smallest and you don't think they're there, nah, man, they're here. So people will definitely find you.
Well, you're definitely a first rounder in the hearts of Brewers fans, man. Yeah, I mean, people
love you
to
guys.
This day.
I love the Brew Crew. I'll always be a Brew Crew.
Yeah. One last thing. If no one had ever experienced a baseball game or opening day in Milwaukee, could you explain, like, finish this sentence. Opening day in Milwaukee is blank.
Priceless.
Awesome.
Just priceless. And then at the end of the day, yeah, you know, your boy, just a little shame plug real quick. Your boy's working with stable storefronts. I'm investing in the e-commerce world. You know, that's the future. And basically, I would love for people to just check it out, stablestorefronts.com. And you can, you know, you can get educated on, you know, what these young kids and Gen Z is really up to. So, you know.
That's all I got, man.
Thank you. Thank you for just having me. Just thank you. And I really appreciate everything you're doing, T. You know, you've been in my life for almost 20 years now, right?
Yeah.
15 years. So, man, yeah. Just thank you for being in my life as well. You know, keep up the success.
More Black History Always, presented by Good Karma Brands. Ahead, we're going to hear Telly Hughes' conversation with Mike Cameron and Jeremy Jeffress later on in the show. Stay tuned. Welcome back into Black History Always, presented by Good Karma Brands on ESPN Wisconsin. I'm Tony Cartagena, very honored to be here with you tonight as we present some of the interviews that Telly Hughes and I were able to do with some of the Black players throughout the history of the Milwaukee Brewers that helped make a massive difference in the community and on the field. So without further ado, 2018, one of the best arms in baseball that year. And just someone in the Brewers relied on in the postseason to get all the way to Game 7 of the NLCS. Here is Telly Hughes and Jeremy Jeffress.
The Milwaukee Brewers were the exception when it came to Black players. The Brewers always would have more than a handful of Black players. And when you look back at that, and now you see where there are some teams that don't have any African-American players, how did that, and knowing the history and knowing what happened April 15th, 1947, and Jackie Robinson really paving the way, when you look back at those times now, does it almost seem like a golden era of like, man, there was a more of an influx of Black players in the game?
Yeah. When you look back, it's special. It's a special day. Especially for us. But at the end of the day, you know, the game is gravitating to a certain degree. So the work ethic gets harder. And since back then, you know, it wasn't a lot of them because of the work ethic. And then some of the trials and tribulations that they had to go through, because you do see more and more throughout the game. And it's for us to just be giving it a try, you know, is special, you know. And then at the end of the day, more and more being on the same team and bonding together, you know, doing stuff outside of the field, you know, just to make an impact of the game. It's huge, man, because, you know, and it can't stop. So I commend the guys when I was in the league, and I commend the people now.
Mm-hmm. And I mean, when you really look back at it, there were a lot of trends that those teams set. I mean, even with the celebration, Cam mentioned the fact that it wasn't well received and well liked. But then when you guys would untuck your jerseys at the end of the game, and it wasn't a form of disrespect, that was just a way of you all expressing that, all right, the work is done. We won, and it's time to move on. But when you're in it, you don't really think that you're setting trends. But now when you look back and see the type of impact that you all had, and knowing that there was players before you all that helped pave the way, I guess what I'm trying to ask is, how do you all, you know, kind of keep that message, or how does today's player actually understand what has had to take place for them to be where they are now? Like, how can we, I guess, reemphasize the importance of Jackie Robinson and what happened, you know, back in 1947?
Yeah. I think the biggest way is, I mean, we don't quit, you know, we continue to set trends. We continue to do, different things in baseball, because nowadays, I mean, back when I first started, I mean, you couldn't wear any jewelry. I mean, there's no jewelry nowhere. 2010, 9, 10, you have no jewelry nowhere. But now you see it almost on every player. doesn't matter which race, you know. But setting the trends is the biggest thing. Continue to do what we know how to do, which is play baseball great. And then, you know, just be you. Because at the end of the day, if you're not you, you're not going to be able to play the greatest at your ability, you know. Mm-hmm. That was a lot of things I was trying to do. I was trying to be me, not, you know, do anything, copy nobody else. You know, just try to set my own way and try to be the best player, you know, out there. And I think, you know, it worked, and it worked for a lot of people.
Gotcha. And my final question, unless, you know, maybe Ashton may have something that I may have forgotten. But you go back to, again, with when your time in Milwaukee, you said the biggest thing were the fans and just having that support. And I think that when people around baseball that have never experienced Milwaukee and playing a summer in Milwaukee, like, what can you say to those other players that never got an opportunity to do something that you were able to do in three different stints?
The question was what, basically?
No, the question is, what could you tell other players or other people about your time in a Brewers uniform that made it better than any other time in any other uniform,
yeah,
outside of just the fans?
Yeah. The city, first of all, sneaky city, sneaky city, in the sense of, you know, food, the people, the places, you know, there's, you know, a lot of history in Milwaukee, but, I think what was so different is I was able to play baseball and not worry about outside things. You know, I could go to the grocery store without being mugged, or I can go, you know, certain places, you know, because in Chicago, when I played in Chicago, I mean, you really couldn't go nowhere. Traffic was terrible. You know, when you go places, you everybody knows you, and you can't just go to the grocery store and get a soda and come back home. So Milwaukee was a comfortable home for me. And I always did call it that. I always called it home, you know, at the end of the day. So, like I said, Milwaukee's is a sneaky, quiet town, but has the most wonderful fans that will make you want to be there.
You're listening to Black History Always on ESPN Wisconsin, presented by Good Karma Brands. Coming up next, we wrap up the show with a conversation surrounding CeCe Sabathia and what he is currently working on documentary-wise with the Black Aces and some of the other Black pitchers that in history were as dominant as he was, as he pays respect to those who paved the way for him. That's coming up next on Black History Always on ESPN Wisconsin, presented by Good Karma Brands.
Help me, please.
Welcome back to Black History Always on ESPN Wisconsin, presented by Good Karma Brands, a special Jackie Robinson Day edition. Have a double segment for you here. First, you're going to hear a conversation that Telly Hughes had with Mike Cameron. Mike Cameron played for the Brewers in the 08-09 seasons, and Jackie Robinson had a profound impact on his life and obviously his career all those years later after Jackie broke the color barrier in 1947 on today's date. So first up, here is Mike Cameron sitting down with former Brewers dugout reporter Telly Hughes on Black History Always, presented by Good Karma Brands.
When you look at the significance of April 15th, 1947, when Jackie Robinson broke the color barrier, and when you take a major league field and there are 6-7 other African-American teammates that you have, I mean, do you think about what it took to even get to that point and how Jackie Robinson was able to pave the way for that to even happen?
Yeah, I always think about that. And look, man, it rubs some people sometimes because I am really into seeing the Black American ball player in this game. I tell you, when I came up in the big leagues in 1995 through the 96, 97, 98, you know, there were players on all teams that I was like, man, I remember him. Like, man, I used to watch him. And then to get a chance to actually partake in the game that we all love and we understood how it's been paved for us to have that opportunity, you know, in Cleveland and even in Boston, you know, Ellis Burstyn, you know, just go, the list go on and on. Detroit, you know, get a chance to play with Luke, play against Luke Whitaker, Cecil Fielder, you know, just the continuation of that. To be able to see how people who actually look like me playing this game and knowing how special it is to have an opportunity to don the same uniform that the people who put up with so much for me to get a joy out of playing the game of baseball. I'm always relegated to thinking about like, how are they able to be so great and dealing with so much, so many different aspects outside of baseball that didn't have anything to do with them other than the color of their skin. And they still play with this joy to be a part of that. I guess I missed the 70s part of it, but I got a chance to see it on TV and on tape, but I got a chance to watch the 80s growing up. And now my little Black American self coming out of small town LaGrange, Georgia, just, I call it literally from the mud, from the clay in the trenches, to get a chance to be entrenched with the fabric of the Black American ball player over the culture of time. Man, to actually see how it's transcended and to get a chance to play, I'm sorry, on a team like the Cincinnati Reds in 1999, and we having 7-8 ball players, and we started doing, the first team to start doing the bounce at home plate. People pissed off about that, you know, coming out through the tunnel in Cincinnati Reds, in the tunnel, you know, every day coming out of DMX, and people just, the culture just, we gravitating and, you know, doing those kind of things. So those are things that make me remember. And then turn around and be the only player to have to wear Jackie Robinson's jersey when in San Diego, because, man, I was by myself, you know, like, it's different. It's hard. It's, you know, I'm able to adjust. We all are adjustable. And so, you know, to be able to have that responsibility is something special in itself. And then, you know, as I get into the, I guess, the sunset of my career, and to turn around and, you know, be a part of some young, vibrant, full of energy brothers in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, and to have that over and over and over again, like it was special, man. It was so special. You know, we created some cultural things that pissed some people off. You know, they was pissed off. You know, whole manager was pissed off because we used to pull our jerseys out at the end of the game. At the end of the game.
I remember that. And,
you know what I'm saying? Like, you're pissed off. You're writing a story about this. And, you know, like, you know what I'm saying? Like, and so people thought it was disrespecting the game, but it wasn't. It was the fact that I took something that I saw from what I've, you know, seen a lot of times just from my dad. It's like, man, the day's over. The work of day is over. So, you know, take your shirt out, take your shoes off, and sit down and get a cup of pops and sit on the couch or whatever, you know. Mm-hmm. But just a part, just being a part of that, and being able to also relay the message, also being able to tell young Bill Hall, young Ricky Weeks, Tony Gwynn Jr., and young Prince Fielder some of the same things that I was taught, you know, and me passing that message on to them. Along with they are already super talented, for them to make sure that they're able to pass on the lineage to the next generation, man. So, and then, you know, getting CeCe and getting a couple other guys and Ray Durham at the end of the 08 season. And we all get a chance to, you know, be out here on this field and celebrate and have some young black kids, black American kids see us do this on the baseball field. You never know where the inspiration may be. Even, you know, like not all over America, just in Milwaukee alone, you know, I'm pretty sure it was a joy for the people of Milwaukee to be able to see that. And we got a chance to experience that once we went, you know, outside the confines of the baseball stadium and ventured out into the city, you know, the efforts and, you know, the warm efforts going to the schools and stuff. And like people really like looking up to you and seeing you, like it was a joy for the older people there. Because they got a chance to see the Hank Aarons and, you know, I mean, the Gary Sheffields and the Greg Vaughns and everything else, which is one of my top mentors who told me about Milwaukee. You know, I had Greg Vaughn, who was a mentor for me in Cincinnati, man. And if it wasn't for him, I don't know where I would be at, because that guy was like my dad for like a whole year and got me back on track, man. So I'm forever grateful for that. And the connection, you see how these things connect each other. And I got a chance to be a part of that connection, you know, in my baseball career.
Big thanks to Telly Hughes for that interview and for all of his great interviews throughout this entire program today. You can check them all out on the brand new ESPN Wisconsin app, whether that's Niger Morgan, Jeremy Jeffers, Ricky Weeks, and what you just heard, Mike Cameron. Now coming up, here's a sit-down conversation that I did with CeCe Sabathia, one of the greatest pitchers in Milwaukee Brewers history, despite only being here half a season. He, post-retirement, recently got the nod for the Pro Baseball Hall of Fame, but also so he's working on a couple projects to help keep the legacy of some of the great black players alive who played throughout the history of time, whether we're talking about Jackie Robinson, Larry Doby, or the Black Aces. So here's a bit of that conversation that I had with CeCe Sabathia regarding pretty much just everything going on in his life. Take a listen.
My dream was to go to college and play football, and I wish I would have had a chance to go to college and, you know, mature and, you know, have a chance to live a college life. Mm-hmm. But I'm glad I didn't play in the NFL and take that route. I mean, you know, it's such a tough life and the career is so short. You never know what's going to happen. So, I was blessed. And I think I really loved and enjoyed playing baseball every single day. So I think it worked out for the best.
So I want to get to a bunch of rapid fire questions here. The team at ESPN Milwaukee challenged me to get 52 questions into you in our allotted time. Because your number should be retired by the Brewers, but that's a whole other rant I can go on later. So we're almost at 20 anyway, so we'll run through these. But before we get to that, I wanted to hit on something kind of serious. Your documentary is incredible. If you haven't, go check that out. If you're listening to this, go check it out. But you're so open about your struggles, especially late in your career. And I guess I just wanted to get from you, do you have any advice for someone who may be going through a similar fight that you went through, and especially people who may be too ashamed or in denial to admit it, just like advice from your experience that you could share with people listening who may benefit from that?
Man, I think the biggest thing is just understanding that everybody has struggles and everybody's going through stuff. And I think the hardest part about getting help is actually reaching out, you know, is taking that first step. So if you feel like you're struggling with, you know, alcohol dependency or, you know, any kind of drug dependency or anything like that, I think the hardest step is just the first step and reaching out and, you know, telling somebody that you can't control, you know, these things that you do by yourself. So I think once you reach out and seek help, you know, there's plenty of programs and plenty of people out there that are willing to help you and get you back on the right track. But you just got to be willing to reach out. And like you said, it is, we're trying to break down the stigma now, but there still sort of is a stigma out there about alcohol dependency and all these different things. But I think more people are starting to understand that this is a disease and, you know, a lot of people can't control it. So there are a lot of ways out there for you to get help. And I think the biggest thing is just reaching out to somebody and letting them know.
Yeah, I think that's a great answer. And I hope people who hear this, you know, can benefit from that. And an odd transition, but a couple rapid fire questions for you here, if you have time. You can only eat one style of food for the rest of your life. What is it?
Probably pizza.
Fair enough. Next question, I kid you not, New York style pizza or cheese curd? So I'd take pizza there.
Pizza, New York style pizza.
So from a baseball perspective, was your agent ever pissed at you for throwing on 3 days rest in a contract year in 2008?
Oh, he was so mad. He didn't show up the best game except for the very last one. He came to the very last, that very last game against the Cubs.
He came to that one?
Yeah.
What were those phone calls like? I just got a little behind the scenes because I can't imagine if you're going into one of the biggest contracts of all time. It's like, actually, I'm throwing on Tuesday and Saturday.
Yeah, I mean, the conversations were kind of one-sided where he would be yelling and, you know, he was a little upset. And I was just like, you know, I felt good. So I was just trying to explain to him, like, you know, I know there's a risk for injury, but there, the more I go out there and pitch, I feel like the more money I'm going to make it. So just let me do this.
Love that. Milwaukee, thanks you and for fielding those phone calls from your agent. So that's awesome. Favorite Denzel Washington movie?
Favorite Denzel movie would probably be Training Day.
All right. When you hear the name Giannis Antetokounmpo, what do you think of?
Beast, man. And just the way he, you know, worked. I mean, you know, if you look at him when he first came into the league until now, just a complete work of art. So, you know, kudos to him on how much he worked to become what he is.
Have you seen him live yet?
Oh, yeah, a couple times.
Gotcha. I was going to say, the owner of our media company here, Good Karma Brands, is a minority owner of the Bucks. So I will invite you to sit on the floor with Craig Karmazin at any time. You want to come to Milwaukee, nice. We can make it happen. You let me know. All-time favorite NBA player?
Michael Jordan.
Pretty best concert you've ever seen?
Man, I recently went to a SZA concert. That was pretty fire. But Hov's concerts are the – nah, I'm going to say Beyonce concerts are the dopest.
Okay. Have do you take your girls to see the Taylor Swift concert at all or the tour at all?
Nah, my girl's not Taylor Swift. They more, right. You know,
more Beyonce?
Beyonce, yeah.
All right, that's what's up.
This is it twice, so.
The name of your fantasy football team?
Crest Creepers. And then I have one called Crest Creepers and I have one called Oaklandish.
Okay, love that. I know you have another interview lined up, so we'll go – whip through these. I remember you going yard when you played for the Brewers. Is it safe to say that you inspired Shohei Ohtani's greatness? You single-handedly inspired Shohei?
He might have seen that video, that homer of Homer Bailey. So, yeah, for sure.
Cats or dogs?
Dogs, for sure.
Pepsi or Coke?
Pepsi.
If you're building a taco, what's on top of it?
Just carne, cilantro, and cheese.
Outside of playing for the Brewers, favorite memory living in Milwaukee?
You know what? It was just the people there in my neighborhood in Brookfield. Like, if I had a good game, people would, like, drop cookies off in my front door and stuff. So it was, like, the cul-de-sac, the neighborhood I lived in was pretty cool.
Nice. You're at a barbecue, hot dog or burger?
Burger.
If you weren't a professional athlete, what career would you have?
I think I would be teaching at my high school and probably coaching.
Love that. Do you remember any Halloween costumes you wore as a kid?
Oh yeah, I had a pretty dope Garfield costume one year. That was
like
that
the cat,
like the old plastic one. Yeah, like you sweat through. Yeah,
love that. Favorite meal of the day?
My favorite meal of the day right now is this. I get this teriyaki bowl from this place called Salad House here in New Jersey.
Okay. Have you ever thought an umpire just did not like you? Like, you're on the mound, you're painting the corners, and you're just like, all right, this guy just doesn't have it for me today.
No, I think that's every umpire. So that's why I think I don't like any of the umpires, none of the umpires like me.
Fair enough. Pretend Tom Brady isn't an option. Best NFL quarterback of all time. And you can't say Jimmy Garoppolo, Raiders fan.
Aaron Rodgers. Well, no, I'm going to say Pat Mahomes.
Better than Rodgers?
Yeah.
Fair enough. So what's next for you? I know you got the job with MLB. Podcasting, media, anything lined up? New documentaries, because obviously you know how to produce one.
Yeah, no, I mean, nah, I'm just kind of living life, man, and things come as they come. You know, we did our last podcast a couple of weeks ago. Just with life, I mean, me and Ryan are really still really close. We played golf the other day together.
Nice.
But just, you know, just scheduling wise, him being getting a promotion at ESPN and, you know, me being busy with MLB. It's hard to keep the podcast up once a week. So, you know, we're looking to do different things. But, you know, for me, I want to do a documentary on the Black Aces. There have only been 15 Black pitchers to win 20 games in a season in MLB. And I think their story should be told because, you know, some of these guys were doing it, you know, in a time when, you know, it wasn't really accepted, you know, in America, you know. So I feel like the history of baseball kind of coincides with American history. And to tell these guys' story, it'd be pretty cool. You know, Don Newcomb and Bob Gibson and Mudcat Grant, you know, Ferguson Jenkins has more wins. He has more complete games in his career than I have wins. He has 269 complete games.
Complete games?
One wins. Yeah, you know what I mean? So these guys' story, I feel like, need to be told. And I want to tell it in a way of the time that they were living in America, you know, the things mm-hmm. that they were going through. So, you know, I think it's time to give these guys their flowers. And it's a cool group for me to be a part of. And I think more people need to understand the story.
Yeah, I think that'd be incredible. Anything you can do to tell those stories. I think because baseball is such the sport of, like, there's records before integration, before Black players were even allowed. And then there's records afterwards and Hall of Fame and things like that. Like, there's a lot that goes into that. That'd be an awesome documentary to watch.
Yeah, and it's pretty cool. I mean, like you said, before baseball was integrated, and, you know, look, you look at all the records and you look at after. I mean, a lot of the Black players still hold all of the records, and they weren't playing for the first, you know, 60 years of the game, you know. So it'd be cool to tell a lot of these different stories and get that out there. But I want to tell it in a way that it coincides with American history, kind of almost like the OJ in America, the ESPN story, how it told the story of LA at the same time.
Yeah.
I think it'd be important to do that with the Black Aces.
Today's the day to celebrate what Jackie Robinson did on the field and for future generations to come. But it's also a day never to forget everything that he endured during his time as a professional baseball player. Being the first to do anything is nerve-wracking, but to be the first Black player to take the field in an all-white sport, a sport that was segregated for the first 50 years of its existence, I can't even begin to imagine the heartache, the struggles, the danger that Jackie Robinson put up with each and every single day. And for that, we say thank you. Your legend, your legacy made it possible for sports reporters like myself, radio hosts, television hosts, whoever that wanted to work in the field before people of color were even allowed in the stadium or in the press boxes, your impact helped make these things happen for players on the field, for people who work in sports surrounding it. And with that, as we end the show, we say cheers, and here's to you, Mr. Robinson. Beyond the sky, it's been a long time coming, but I know a change gonna come. Oh, yes, it will. I go to the movie and I go downtown. Somebody keep telling me no. April 15th, 1947, wearing number 42 for the Brooklyn Dodgers, Jack Roosevelt Robinson took the field and officially broke the color barrier in the National League, becoming the first African-American player to play professional baseball. That day, one of the most important in the history of American sports, specifically Major League Baseball, will live in infamy and is celebrated on April 15th every single year around Major League Baseball. Good evening and welcome to a special edition of Black History Always on ESPN Wisconsin, presented by Good Karma Brands, the Jackie Robinson Day edition. I'm Tony Cartagena, and over the next hour, you are going to hear exclusive one-on-one interviews, sit-downs that former Brewers dugout reporter Telly Hughes conducted with some of the players whose career and highlights were made possible due to the path that Jackie Robinson paved nearly 100 years ago. On today's show, you're going to hear conversations with Brewers' current associate manager, Ricky Weeks. You're going to hear from 2011 postseason hero, Niger Morgan, Mike Cameron, who signed with the Milwaukee Brewers as a free agent, and from Jeremy Jeffress, who played a pivotal role in the bullpen for the Brewers as they made a run to the NLCS in 2018. You're listening to Black History Always on ESPN Wisconsin, presented by Good Karma Brands. And as April 15th is obviously a celebration of Jackie Robinson breaking the color barrier in the National League, I did want to also pay respect and pay homage to July 5th of that same year, 1947. Larry Doby took the field for the team that was then named the Cleveland Indians and broke the color barrier in the American League. Jackie Robinson's impact on and off the field obviously helped pave the way for Doby's opportunity in Cleveland. However, Jackie was first to do it in the National League, Doby first to do it in the American League. But guys like them, their impact, what they endured physically and mentally during that time period, it paved the way, whether it's Prince Fielder, CC Sabathia, the aforementioned Ricky Weeks, Jeremy Jeffress, Niger Morgan, African-American players who have made massive impacts in their own lives, the lives of their families, their lives of generations to come, and the lives of others who just grew up around the sport. Without the impacts of a Jackie Robinson, there is no black media in the dugout. Telly Hughes doesn't get the opportunities that he does years and years later if someone wasn't there to do it first in the way that Jackie Robinson was. There's no Tony Cartagena, myself, working in sports media without the sacrifices that these players dating back to 1947 made. So it's not just all about on the field. It's about the impact there and their long-lasting effect on the lives of so many people. That is why April 15th, in my opinion, should always, always be celebrated in the game of baseball, something we never want to forget, because what Jackie Robinson dealt with on the field, off the field, in the press, at home, he was never safe. He was never in a position where he could ever feel comfortable. He was always in a position where he had to defend himself and his family, and those sacrifices will never be forgotten. April 15th, 1947, as I said earlier, one of the most important days in American sports history, specifically for Major League Baseball. Now, without further ado, on this special edition of Black History Always on ESPN Wisconsin, presented by Good Karma Brands, I present to you Telly Hughes. First up, his one-on-one sit-down conversation with Ricky Weeks, the now associate manager of the Milwaukee Brewers. Take a listen.
You being someone that has a connection with the old Negro League, and I mean with your grandfather, and knowing the significance of April 15th, 1947, when Jackie Robinson broke the color barrier, when you look at the game today, how can the generation now pass on the legacy and what Jackie Robinson meant to everything that has been accomplished in Major League Baseball by African-American players to this point?
Yeah, the first thing I look at is just, you know, keeping that name and the message and the whole folklore about Jackie Robinson alive. You know, anytime we get to a point where we are, you know, at some point, you know, thinking about, okay, what happened back then or what happened to Jackie Robinson and things like that, you know, you have to talk about it. And I think the biggest thing that, you know, we can do for a Jackie Robinson and history behind him and the Major League Baseball, we have to keep the name alive and keep talking about it.
Yeah, gotcha. Now, mentioning that, I mean, thinking about that 2008, 2009, 2010 seasons, the Milwaukee Brewers had probably the most black players on one team in Major League Baseball. You want to talk about something that we probably won't see again, when you had 6, 7, 8 African-American players on one team. When you look back at that, I mean, did you all really take notice to what was going on, or were you guys just so into the season where you just thought of, you know, you just said, okay, we'll think about that later? Because that was pretty significant then, and it's significant now.
Yeah, no, for sure. I think going back there, I think we knew subconsciously, I think, but it was never harped on. It was never thought about because we were so into the season, and you know, we just had a great clubhouse, man. I don't care what it was. It was always about the clubhouse, and we were a very tight knit group. And I think during it, I don't think we really knew. Maybe after the game, we would talk about it, I think, a little bit. But it really, it wasn't like a really big deal. We were just so into the season. But In hindsight, you know, you look back at it and you look at the transition in Major League Baseball right now, with the you know, the lesser percentage of African Americans inside this game. You know, we look back, this was 15 years ago. You know, let's say, you know, that was something that, you know, to this day, I'll probably say is, you know, very special to me and very special to everybody who was a part of that.
Yeah. And I know there are things that you all may do, because I've taken notice, like Jason Bourgeois, who is the Chicago White Sox first base coach. He wears high socks in honor of the Negro Leagues you know, Jackie Robinson and the way that they wear their socks. You know, I've taken notice how you wear high socks. And is that an opportunity, if someone asks you, why do you do that? It's an opportunity to kind of educate them on the history and how that was the style back then. And it's paying honor to those players.
I wouldn't say that, for, you know, for me at least. I know Jason Bourgeois very well. Me and him talked a couple weeks ago, but I know for him, yeah, for sure. I think for me, honestly, I think it just looks good. I don't know. But, you know, for me, but, you know, it's all seriousness. You know, I have heard that before. For me, it's just, you know, go out there and I guess, you know, you look good, you coach good, I guess. I don't know.
All right. And again, this is going to run opening day, so I'm just going to ask you a couple of questions about the team this year, and then I'll get you out of here. So so big picture with this team, Ricky, I mean, every year it seems like the Brewers kind of overachieve, and you know, you got the manager of the year and Pat Murphy and you right by his side coming back. What is the big picture of this team, and what are the true expectations of what this year's ball club can do?
You know, honestly, it's kind of day by day. You know, we look at our roster last year, you know, nobody really gave us a chance. You know, you look at the moves that we made. I think it was over 17 starting pitchers we had come through. Over 60 plus players that touched our roster throughout the year last year. So, you know, people can say that we were underdogs, or, you know, they counted us out and things like that. But to be perfectly honest with you, I think everybody inside this room expects more. So I'm not going to say we're going to do more or do less, but we're going to keep plugging every day. And, you know, that's what's instilled inside of us. That's what we try to promote to our players. And at the end of the day, you know, it's all about the players, and they show the play every day. So that's the beautiful thing about being a Milwaukee Brewer right now.
And another beautiful thing about being a Milwaukee Brewer is having Christian Yelich back. And Ricky, it's not too far. You're not too far removed from, you know, your final playing days. And so being around an all-star caliber player like Yelly, and knowing that his career is kind of coming, you know, he's kind of on the back nine of his career. Is there anything that you pass along with your experiences, or you just kind of let him do his own thing? And how is he looking?
No, he's been looking great. I think for him, it's the biggest thing is, you know, if you're in this league, you're always learning. I don't care if you're a first-year player, 10-year vet like he is, you're always learning. And I think from his standpoint, there's not too much I can say, anybody can say to him to even grow his game, you know, even more. But I know we have kind of challenged him to kind of speak up more, to give his wisdom, because I think it means a lot, you know, coming from a player. So I think with him speaking up a lot more over the past couple of years and doing his thing, you know, he's only going to help everybody around him. And it's not a coincidence that we're winning baseball games because of our clubhouse.
If you missed any of Telly Hughes' sit-down conversation on Jackie Robinson Day with Ricky Weeks, you can download it in the brand new ESPN Wisconsin app. Just your Apple App Store, Google ESPN Wisconsin app. Download this exclusive content today. But I'm afraid to die. Welcome back into Black History Always on ESPN Wisconsin, presented by Good Karma Brands, the special Jackie Robinson Day edition. If you're just tuning in, On April 15th, 1947, the great Jackie Robinson broke the color barrier in the National League. Larry Doby did it in Cleveland on July 5th of the same year. But on April 15th every year, Major League Baseball celebrates what Jackie Robinson endured and persevered through by celebrating number 42. And that's what we are doing here today on Black History Always. Telly Hughes had the opportunity, you heard earlier in the show, to sit down one-on-one with Ricky Weeks. And now I do want to play some of his one-on-one conversation with 2011 Milwaukee Brewers postseason hero, Niger Morgan. Take a listen.
When you do look back on those times, T, and just the transition from being the opposing, you've been on the opposing team when you're with the Pirates, and you kind of see him in passing, I mean, because the Brewers and Pirates play 100 times a year.
Yeah, same,
but
yeah,
once you became a Brewer, how was that
day,
interaction?
Honestly, Tate, to this day, my first, honestly, I don't think nobody even knows except for maybe real true baseball fans, but when I got called up, when I finally got my first call back in 2007 with the Pirates, that September call-up, basically my first game was in Milwaukee, and my first hit was against Matt Wise. You know, Matt Wise always be in my, you know what I mean? So thank you, Matt. 2-1 count, he threw me a changeup, and I did the exact same thing that basically hit the ball right up the middle. And that was my very first hit, and then that was one of my most memorable hits as well. So, Milwaukee's always been, I didn't know it at the moment, but it's always, been home for me.
Yeah. And when you think about your relationship, did you ever stop and think to yourself, like, man, I get to be around Bob Uecker every day?
My goodness, yeah. To this day, I'm still, I'm a fan. I kind of have to pinch myself, and there's sometimes, because I'm humbled too, that I don't realize that I got that out of millions and millions of young men, little boys out here who strive to get to the major leagues. I was one of them, and I think there's out of everybody, there's 22,000 and something, 800 and something. I forgot the exact number, but. I'm one of those, those special souls that actually, that can say that, I played, and, I cherish this to this day that, I'm a member of a special fraternity, a brotherhood, and I'll always just be thankful, always wear it with pride that, I'm a Major League Baseball player, and, that I'm a role model, and, I like to go out here and just, go out here and help people. I even try to charge people to play this wonderful game that I love doing. And I couldn't even charge people, man. So at the end of the day, that's why, I just turned it into my Tony Plush Foundation. And so I just help give back, because I love just teaching and volunteering and being able to give the highest level of knowledge to people who can't be able to play this game. And, this is what I love to do. I'm very passionate about this game, about where it's going. The future is very bright on where it's at right now. So, man, I just, the guys that are out there playing right now, even the young brother, Jackson Cheerio, man, I'm just, the Brewers always there, even Ricky Weeks doing his thing, Pat Murphy doing his thing too. So, it's a wonderful, wonderful squad, and, there's a lot of success there, for some reason, just even when you don't have those household names, the Brew Crew is always, always in the mix. And, that just shows from the leadership, from Mark Antanasio all the way down to the people that are out there scrubbing his shoes, and to people that you don't get to see behind the, that are really making it happen. Even Katina doing her thing, Katina Shaw, and all the other special people that are just really, really doing their thing that makes Milwaukee a well-oiled machine and makes it fun to go to the ballpark and enjoy and make, and it's enjoyable.
Yeah. You mentioned how grateful you are to be one of the few people to ever play or put on a major uniform. And you talk about the future of the game. Mm-hmm. How much Do you try to emphasize how the path was paved from Jackie Robinson? Like, yes, just sir. Like the young guys understanding what Jackie Robinson did to create these opportunities for other African-American players.
Right. Well, I mean, obviously they picked the right one because he was highly educated and, you know, he knew for a fact that people were going to get under his skin. And he was professional about it, and he didn't break. And basically he helped pave the way for all of us to get in, not just, just African-Americans. Just, you know, you got the African Latinos as well. So, you know, it's a blessing. And you know, I'm thankful to even say that I was actually, you know, able to play on certain fields that he actually played on, being in Wrigley. You know, no, he didn't play at Dodger Stadium. where else did he play? Where do you play in Boston? Are you playing Boston? Yeah. So, you know, I was actually, you know, and, you know, rest in peace, Wakefield, but you know, I clipped them too. So yeah, you know, I'm thankful to just you know, be able to say that I was, you know, I'm a major leaguer. Yeah. And be around all those special players too.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Absolutely. I mean, because you play with people now that are being inducted to the Hall of Fame. I mean, being around CeCe and things of that nature. So, yeah, man, that is very cool.
Yeah, I went 3-for-5 against him, though, but he rocked me. He threw me a curveball, and he hit the recliner on me, and
How in the world you remember all that, man?
Because that's why I'm special. I mean, that's why I didn't have to have, you know, like, I guess the video that they needed now, you know, people need, I can remember things like to this day that, you know, it's just, you know, that's why I was special, man, and able to make it up there. And that's why, you know, the analytics and the talented people were able to see, you know, like, nah, man, this dude can play, even though he's a little bit quirky, but you know, he can definitely play out here, man. I wasn't a first rounder, but you know, I can represent for the people in the later rounds, the 33rds and stuff like that. So, you know, hey man, if you can play, they will find you. So no matter where you at, no matter what you're doing in life, even if you're at the smallest and you don't think they're there, nah, man, they're here. So people will definitely find you.
Well, you're definitely a first rounder in the hearts of Brewers fans, man. Yeah, I mean, people
love you
to
guys.
This day.
I love the Brew Crew. I'll always be a Brew Crew.
Yeah. One last thing. If no one had ever experienced a baseball game or opening day in Milwaukee, could you explain, like, finish this sentence. Opening day in Milwaukee is blank.
Priceless.
Awesome.
Just priceless. Yeah. And then at the end of the day, yeah, you know, your boy, just a little shame plug real quick. Your boy's working with Stable Storefronts. I'm investing in the e-commerce world. You know, that's the future. And basically, I would love for people to just check it out, stablestorefronts.com. And you can, you know, you can get educated on, you know, what these young kids and Gen Z is really up to. So, you know.
That's all I
but
got,
just
man.
Thank you. For just having me, just thank you. And I really appreciate everything you're doing, T. You know, you've been in my life for almost 20 years now, right?
Yeah.
15 years. So, man, just thank you for being in my life as well. You know, keep up the success.
More Black History Always, presented by Good Karma Brands. Ahead, we're going to hear Telly Hughes' conversation with Mike Cameron and Jeremy Jeffress later on in the show. Stay tuned. Welcome back into Black History Always, presented by Good Karma Brands on ESPN Wisconsin. I'm Tony Cartagena, very honored to be here with you tonight as we present some of the interviews that Telly Hughes and I were able to do with some of the Black players throughout the history of the Milwaukee Brewers that helped make a massive difference in the community and on the field. So without further ado, 2018, one of the best arms in baseball that year. And just someone in the Brewers relied on in the postseason to get all the way to Game 7 of the NLCS. Here is Telly Hughes and Jeremy Jeffress.
The Milwaukee Brewers were the exception when it came to Black players. the Brewers always would have more than a, you know, sometime a handful of black players. And when you look back at that, and now you see where there are some teams that don't have any African-American players, like, how did that, and knowing the history and knowing what happened April 15th, 1947, and Jackie Robinson really paving the way, when you look back at those times now, does it almost seem like a golden era of like, man, there was a, you know, there was a more of an influx of black players in the game?
Yeah. When you look back, it's, I mean, it's special. It's a special day, especially for us. But at the end of the day, you know, the game is gravitating to a certain degree. You know, so the work ethic gets harder. And since back then, you know, it wasn't a lot of them because of the work ethic. And then there were some of the trials and tribulations that they had to go through, because you do see more and more throughout the game. And it's for us to just be giving it a try, you know, is special. You know, and then at the end of the day, more and more being on the same team and bonding together, you know, doing stuff outside of the field, you know, just to make an impact of the game. It's huge, man, because, you know, and it can't stop. So I commend the guys when I was in the league, and I commend the people now.
Mm-hmm. And I mean, when you really look back at it, there were a lot of trends that those teams set. I mean, even with the celebration, Cam mentioned the fact that it wasn't well received and well liked, but then when you guys would untuck your jerseys at the end of the game, and it wasn't a form of disrespect. That was just a way of you all expressing that, all right, the work is done. We won, and it's time to move on. But when you're in it, you don't really think that you're setting trends. But now when you look back and see the type of impact that you all had, and knowing that there was players before you all that helped pave the way, I guess what I'm trying to ask is, how do you all, you know, kind of keep that message, or how does today's player actually understand what has had to take place for them to be where they are now? Like, how can we, I guess, reemphasize the importance of Jackie Robinson and what happened, you know, back in 1947?
I think the biggest way is, I mean, we don't quit, you know, we continue to set trends. We continue to do different things in baseball, because nowadays, I mean, back when I first started, I mean, you couldn't wear any jewelry. I mean, there's no jewelry nowhere. 2010, 9, 10. You have no jewelry nowhere. But now you see it almost on every player. It doesn't matter which race. You know, but setting the trends is the biggest thing. Continue to do what we know how to do, which is play baseball great. And then, you know, just be you, because at the end of the day, if you're not you, you're not going to be able to play the greatest at your ability. You know, that was a lot of things I was trying to do. I was trying to be me, not, you know, do anything, copy nobody else, you know, just try to set my own way and try to be the best player, you know, out there. And I think, you know, you know, it worked, and it worked for a lot of people.
Gotcha. And my final question, unless, you know, maybe Ashton may have something that I may have forgotten. But you go back to, again, with when your time in Milwaukee, you said the biggest thing were the fans and just having that support. And I think that when people around baseball that have never experienced Milwaukee and playing a summer in Milwaukee, like, what can you say to those other players that never got an opportunity to do something that you were able to do in three different stints?
The question was what, basically?
No, the question is, what could you tell other players or other people about your time in a Brewers uniform that made it better than any other time in any other uniform outside of just the fans?
The city, first of all, sneaky city. sneaky city, in the sense of, you know, food, the the people, the places, you know, there's, you know, a lot of history in Milwaukee, but I think what was so different is I was able to play baseball and not worry about outside things. You know, I could go to the grocery store without being mugged, or I can go, you know, certain places, you know, because in Chicago, when I played in Chicago, I mean, you really couldn't go nowhere. Traffic was terrible. And when you go places, you everybody knows you, and you can't just go to the grocery store and get a soda and come back home. So Milwaukee was a comfortable home for me. And I always did call it that. I always called it home, you know, at the end of the day. So, like I said, Milwaukee's a sneaky, quiet town, but has the most wonderful fans that will make you want to be there.
You're listening to Black History Always on ESPN Wisconsin, presented by Good Karma Brands. Coming up next, we wrap up the show with a conversation surrounding CeCe Sabathia and what he is currently working on documentary-wise with the Black Aces and some of the other Black pitchers that in history were as dominant as he was, as he pays respect to those who paved the way for him. That's coming up next on Black History Always on ESPN Wisconsin, presented by Good Karma Brands.
And I say, brother, help me, please.
Welcome back to Black History Always on ESPN Wisconsin, presented by Good Karma Brands, a special Jackie Robinson Day edition. Have a double segment for you here. First, you're going to hear a conversation that Telly Hughes had with Mike Cameron. Mike Cameron played for the Brewers in the 08-09 seasons, and Jackie Robinson had a profound impact on his life and obviously his career all those years later after Jackie broke the color barrier in 1947 on today's date. So first up, here is Mike Cameron sitting down with former Brewers dugout reporter Telly Hughes on Black History Always, presented by Good Karma Brands.
When you look at the significance of April 15th, 1947, when Jackie Robinson broke the color barrier, and when you take a major league field and there are 6-7 other African-American teammates that you have, I mean, do you think about what it took to even get to that point and how Jackie Robinson was able to pave the way for that to even happen?
Yeah, I always think about that. And look, man, it rubs some people sometimes because I am really into seeing the Black American ball player in this game. I tell you, when I came up in the big leagues in 1995 through the 96, 97, 98, you know, there were players on all teams that I was like, man, I remember him. Like, man, I used to watch him. And then to get a chance to actually partake in the game that we all love and we understood how it's been paved for us to have that opportunity, you know, in Cleveland and even in Boston, you know, Ellis Burstyn, you know, the list go on and on. Detroit, you know, get a chance to play against Lou Whitaker, Cecil Fielder, you know, just the continuation of that. To be able to see how people who actually look like me playing this game and knowing how special it is to have an opportunity to don the same uniform that the people who put up with so much for me to get a joy out of playing the game of baseball. I'm always relegated to thinking about, like, how are they able to be so great and dealing with so many different aspects outside of baseball that didn't have anything to do with them other than the color of their skin. And they still play with this joy to be a part of that. I guess I missed the 70s part of it, but I got a chance to see it on TV and on tape, but I got a chance to watch the 80s growing up. And now my little Black American self coming out of small town LaGrange, Georgia, just, I call it literally from the mud, from the clay in the trenches, to get a chance to be entrenched with the fabric of the Black American ball player over the culture of time, man, to actually see how it's transcended and to get a chance to play, I'm sorry, on a team like the Cincinnati Reds in 1999, and we having 7-8 ball players, and we started doing, the first team to start doing the bounce at home plate. People pissed off about that, you know, coming out through the tunnel in Cincinnati Reds, in the tunnel, every day coming out of DMX, and people just, the culture just, we gravitating and, you know, doing those kind of things. So those are things that make me remember. And then turn around and be the only player to have to wear Jackie Robinson's jersey when in San Diego, because, man, I was by myself, you know? Like, it's different. It's hard. It's, you know, I'm able to adjust. We all are adjustable. And so, you know, to be able to have that responsibility is something special in itself. And then, you know, as I get into the, I guess, the sunset of my career, and to turn around and, you know, be a part of some young, vibrant, full of energy brothers in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, and to have that over and over and over again, like it was special, man. It was so special. You know, we created some cultural things that pissed some people off. You know, they was pissed off. You know, whole manager was pissed off because we used to pull our jerseys out at the end of the game. At the end of the game.
I remember that. And,
you know what I'm saying? Like, you're pissed off. You're writing a story about this. And so people thought it was disrespecting the game. But it wasn't. It was the fact that I took something that I saw from what I've, you know, seen a lot of times just from my dad, is like, man, the day's over. The work of day is over. So, you know, take your shirt out, take your shoes off, and sit down and get a cup of pops and sit on the couch or whatever, you know. Mm-hmm. But just a part, just being a part of that, and being able to also relay the message, also being able to tell young Bill Hall, young Ricky Weeks, Tony Gwynn Jr., and young Prince Fielder, some of the same things that I was taught, you know, and me passing that message on to them, along with they are already super talented, for them to make sure that they're able to pass on the lineage to the next generation, man. So, and then, you know, getting CeCe and getting a couple other guys and Ray Durham at the end of the 08 season, and we all get a chance to, you know, be out here on this field and celebrate and have some young Black American kids see us do this on a baseball field. You never know where the inspiration may be. Even, you know, like, not all over America, just in Milwaukee alone, you know, I'm pretty sure it was a joy for the people of Milwaukee to be able to see that. And we got a chance to experience that once we went, you know, outside the confines of the baseball stadium and ventured out into the city, you know, the efforts and, you know, the warm efforts going to the schools and stuff, and like people really like looking up to you and seeing you, like it was a joy for the older people there, because they got a chance to see the Hank Aarons and, you know, I mean, the Gary Sheffields and the Greg Vaughns and everything else, which is one of my top mentors who told me about Milwaukee. You know, I had Greg Vaughn, who was a mentor for me in Cincinnati, man. And if it wasn't for him, I don't know where I would be at, because that guy was like my dad for like a whole year and got me back on track, man. So I'm forever grateful for that. And the connection, you see how these things connect each other. And I got a chance to be a part of that connection, you know, in my baseball career.
Big thanks to Telly Hughes for that interview and for all of his great interviews throughout this entire program today. You can check them all out on the brand new ESPN Wisconsin app, whether that's Nigel Morgan, Jeremy Jeffers, Ricky Weeks, and what you just heard, Mike Cameron. Now coming up, here's a sit-down conversation that I did with CeCe Sabathia, one of the greatest pitchers in Milwaukee Brewers history, despite only being here half a season. He, post-retirement, recently got the nod for the Pro Baseball Hall of Fame, but also he's working on a couple projects to help keep the legacy of some of the great black players alive who played throughout the history of time, whether we're talking about Jackie Robinson, Larry Doby, or the Black Aces. So here's a bit of that conversation that I had with CeCe Sabathia regarding pretty much just everything going on in his life. Take a listen.
My dream was to go to college and play football, and I wish I would have had a chance to go to college and, you know, mature and, you know, have a chance to live a college life. Mm-hmm. But I'm glad I didn't play in the NFL and take that route. I mean, you know, it's such a tough life and the career is so short, you never know what's going to happen. So, I was blessed, and I think I really loved and enjoyed playing baseball every single day. So I think it worked out for the best.
So I want to get to a bunch of rapid fire questions here. The team at ESPN Milwaukee challenged me to get 52 questions into you in our allotted time because your number should be retired by the Brewers. But that's a whole other rant I can go on later. So we're almost at 20 anyway, so we'll run through these. But before we get to that, I wanted to hit on something kind of serious. Your documentary is incredible. If you haven't, go check that out. If you're listening to this, go check it out. But you're so open about your struggles, especially late in your career. And I guess I just wanted to get from you, do you have any advice for someone who may be going through a similar fight that you went through, and especially people who may be too ashamed or in denial to admit it, just like advice from your experience that you could share with people listening who may benefit from that?
Man, I think the biggest thing is just understanding that everybody has struggles and everybody's going through stuff. And I think the hardest part about getting help is actually reaching out, is taking that first step. So if you feel like you're struggling with, alcohol dependency or, any kind of drug dependency or anything like that, I think the hardest step is just the first step and reaching out and telling somebody that you can't control, these things that you do by yourself. So I think once you reach out and seek help, there's plenty of programs and plenty of people out there that are willing to help you and get you back on the right track. But you just got to be willing to reach out. And like you said, it is, we're trying to break down the stigma now, but there still sort of is a stigma out there about alcohol dependency and all these different things. But I think more people are starting to understand that this is a disease and, a lot of people can't control it. So there are a lot of ways out there for you to get help. And I think the biggest thing is just reaching out to somebody and letting them know.
Yeah, I think that's a great answer. And I hope people who hear this, can benefit from that. And an odd transition, but a couple rapid fire questions for you here, if you have time. You can only eat one style of food for the rest of your life. What is it?
Probably pizza.
Fair enough. Next question, I kid you not, New York style pizza or cheese curd? So I'd take pizza there.
Pizza. New York style pizza.
So from a baseball perspective, was your agent ever pissed at you for throwing on 3 days rest in a contract year in 2008?
Oh, he was so mad. He didn't show up at the game except for the very last one. He came to that very last game against the Cubs.
He came to that one?
Yeah.
What were those phone calls like? I just got a little behind the scenes because I can't imagine if you're going into one of the biggest contracts of all time. It's like, actually, I'm throwing on Tuesday and Saturday.
Yeah, I mean, the conversations were kind of one-sided where he would be yelling and, he was a little upset. And I was just like, I felt good. So I was just trying to explain to him, I know there's a risk for injury, but the more I go out there and pitch, I feel like the more money I'm going to make it. So just let me do this.
Love that. And Milwaukee thanks you and for fielding those phone calls from your agent. So that's awesome. Favorite Denzel Washington movie?
Favorite Denzel movie would probably be Training Day.
All right. When you hear the name Giannis Antetokounmpo, what do you think of?
Beast, man. And just the way he, worked. I mean, if you look at him when he first came into the league until now, just a complete work of art. So, kudos to him on how much he worked to become what he is.
Have you seen him live yet?
Oh, yeah. A couple times.
Gotcha. I was going to say the owner of our media company here, Good Karma Brands, is a minority owner of the Bucks. So I will invite you to sit on the floor with Craig Karmazin at any time. You want to come to Milwaukee, nice. We can make it happen. You let me know. All-time favorite NBA player.
Michael Jordan.
Pretty best concert you've ever seen.
Man, I recently went to a SZA concert that was pretty fire, but Hov's concerts are the I'm gonna say Beyonce concerts are the dopest.
Okay. Have do you take your girls to see the Taylor Swift concert at all or the tour at all?
Nah, my girl's not Taylor Swift. They more, right. You know,
more Beyonce?
Beyonce, yeah.
All right, that's what's up.
This is it twice, so.
The name of your fantasy football team?
Crest Creepers. And then I have one called Crest Creepers, and I have one called Oaklandish.
Okay, love that. I know you have another interview lined up, so we'll go whip through these. I remember you going yard when you played for the Brewers. Is it safe to say that you inspired Shohei Ohtani's greatness? You single-handedly inspired Shohei.
He might have seen that video, that homer of Homer Bailey. So, yeah, for sure.
Cats or dogs?
Dogs, for sure.
Pepsi or Coke?
Pepsi.
If you're building a taco, what's on top of it?
Just carne, cilantro, and cheese.
Outside of playing for the Brewers, favorite memory living in Milwaukee?
You know what? It was just the people there in my neighborhood in Brookfield. Like, if I had a good game, people would like drop cookies off in my front door and stuff. So it was like the cul-de-sac, the neighborhood I lived in was pretty cool.
Nice. You're at a barbecue, hot dog or burger?
Burger.
If you weren't a professional athlete, what career would you have?
I think I would be teaching at my high school and probably coaching.
Love that. Do you remember any Halloween costumes you wore as a kid?
Oh yeah, I had a pretty dope Garfield costume one year. That was
like
that was
the cool. Cat,
like the old plastic one. Yeah, like you sweat through. Yeah,
love that. Favorite meal of the day?
My favorite meal of the day right now is this. I get this teriyaki bowl from this place called Salad House here in New Jersey.
Okay. Have you ever thought an umpire just did not like you? Like you're on the mound, you're painting the corners, and you're just like, all right, this guy just doesn't have it for me today.
No, I think that's every umpire. So that's why I think I don't like any of the umpires. None of the umpires like me.
Fair enough. Pretend Tom Brady isn't an option. Best NFL quarterback of all time. And you can't say Jimmy Garoppolo, Raiders fan.
Aaron Rodgers. Well, no, I'm going to say Pat Mahomes.
Better than Rodgers?
Yeah.
Fair enough. So what's next for you? I know you got the job with MLB, podcasting, media, anything lined up? New documentaries, because obviously you know how to produce one.
Yeah, no, I mean, nah, I'm just kind of living life, man, and things come as they come. You know, we did our last podcast a couple of weeks ago, just with life. I mean, me and Ryan are really still really close. We played golf the other day together.
Nice.
But just, you know, just scheduling wise, him being getting a promotion at ESPN and, you know, me being busy with MLB, it's hard to keep the podcast up once a week. So, you know, we're looking to do different things. But, you know, for me, I want to do a documentary on the Black Aces. There have only been 15 Black pitchers to win 20 games in a season in MLB. And I think their story should be told because, you know, some of these guys were doing it, you know, in a time when, you know, it wasn't really accepted, you know, in America. You know, so I feel like the history of baseball kind of coincides with American history. And to tell these guys' story, it'd be pretty cool. You know, Don Newcomb and Bob Gibson and Mudcat Grant, you know, Ferguson Jenkins has more wins. He has more complete games in his career than I have wins. He has 269 complete games.
Complete games?
One wins. Yeah, you know what I mean? So these guys' story, I feel like, need to be told. And I want to tell it in a way of the time that they were living in America, you know, the things that they were going through. So, you know, I think it's time to give these guys their flowers, and it's a cool group for me to be a part of. And I think more people need to understand the story.
Yeah, I think that'd be incredible. Anything you can do to tell those stories. I think because baseball is such the sport of like there's records before integration, before Black players were even allowed. And then there's records afterwards and Hall of Fame and things like that. Like there's a lot that goes into that. That'd be an awesome documentary to watch.
Yeah, and it's pretty cool. I mean, like you said, before baseball was integrated and, you know, look, you look at all the records and you look at after. I mean, a lot of the Black players still hold all of the records and they weren't playing for the first, you know, 60 years of the game, you know. So it'd be cool to tell a lot of these different stories and get that out there. But I want to tell it in a way that it coincides with American history, kind of almost like the OJ and America, the ESPN story out. how it told the story of LA at the same time.
Yeah.
I think it'd be important to do that with the Black Aces.
Today's the day to celebrate what Jackie Robinson did on the field and for future generations to come. But it's also a day never to forget everything that he endured during his time as a professional baseball player. Being the first to do anything is nerve-wracking, but to be the first Black player to take the field in an all-white sport, a sport that was segregated for the first 50 years of its existence, I can't even begin to imagine the heartache, the struggles, the danger that Jackie Robinson put up with each and every single day. And for that, we say thank you. Your legend, your legacy made it possible for sports reporters like myself, radio hosts, television hosts, whoever that wanted to work in the field before people of color were even allowed in the stadium or in the press boxes. Your impact helped make these things happen for players on the field, for people who work in sports surrounding it. And with that, as we end the show, we say cheers and here's to you, Mr. Robinson. Beyond the sky. It's been a long time coming, but I know a change gonna come. Oh, yes, it will. I go to the movie and I go downtown. Somebody keep telling me, don't.